Welcome to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast for Sunday, June 26, 2016. The Reverend Mon McCaddy is preaching. The sermon today is Expectations and Exceptions, Part 2. The Old Testament reading is from Exodus chapter 35, verses 4 through 10. And the New Testament lesson today is from 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 4 through 11.
If you talk to people who work with me closely, I'm really a hard guy to work with. I've only had one negative personnel review in 20 years while I was senior pastor at West Valley in Cupertino, and that was every one of my staff liked me too much. And I was thinking in the back of my mind, well, all those dinners paid off. In all honesty, CPC has been an absolute source of delight. And we have so enjoyed our time here. And it will be great whenever we run into one another, possibly. And, when we all get to heaven and we can look one another up and see if we remember who one another is. But by very audit, it says we have new bodies. So that should mean that our memories are fresh again, right? All that I ask you to do is that if we run into one another somewhere, share with me your name, okay? Jim and I were figuring out that over the course of time in the interims that I've done in the last 10 years, since I sort of retired, we have come into contact with, what is it now, 2,500? 2,500 people. So, there's a good chance that I'll know your face. If you see me turn around and walk the other way, then you know that I don't even want to remember your name. But, it's not going to happen with anyone here. But the lessons before us this morning are critical. The Old Testament, for the future, the Old Testament has to do with the beginning of the collection of the offerings for the materials needed to build the first tabernacle. And so the people are bringing in jewelry items, they're bringing in fine garments. God gave Moses a list of all of the materials that were going to be needed in order for the tabernacle to be built. But the thing I liked the most about it, if you were to go to this passage in Exodus 35 and read all of the passages around it, the part that I like the best is that he's also asking the people that with whatever skill you have, make that ability present so that the tabernacle can be built. And that's real important. Whatever skill you have, whatever are your talents. And sometimes you get used in different ways. Jim and I, for years, as we've done these study tours that we fell into doing by accident, but for many years I had a biblical archaeologist that traveled with us in the Holy Lands and in the Middle East, and it was just a wonderful time of having Marilyn with us. Well, if Jenna, every once in a while, you'll notice she's doodling. She thinks better when she doodles. And she does a lot of sketching and stuff. And so, Marilyn, one time in a conversation with Jenna, as we were going to one of the locations, said, you do it. And she was sketching some of the things that we'd seen and everything. And she was complimenting Jenna on this. And she said, if you ever wanted to go to an archaeological dig, they would love to have you come along so that you could sit beside an archaeologist and they would try to tell you what they're seeing as they see the ruins and you can begin drawing it for them. And Gina just kind of lit up. Maybe we'll still do this. We've kind of put it on a back burner because Gina, I said, what would I be able to do? And Marilyn said, you see the guy out there on his hands and knees brushing dirt, and the guy over there carrying dirt? They can always use those guys. So I have been less enthused about going to an archaeological dig than Gina has been, and maybe Gina sometime will go on her own. But the bottom line is, God is saying through Moses, however you have been endowed, use that in the building of the temple. Now, Paul builds upon this in 1 Corinthians. And we oftentimes refer to the passages, especially in 1 Corinthians 12, as the gifts of the Spirit. There's five other passages in the New Testament, or four other passages that refer to the gifts of the Spirit. Not one of them, they repeat some, not one of them has the identical list. What most scholars that I'm aware of conclude is that there's more there than what meets the eye. And what I love about verses 4 through 11 is that, in my mind, it expands it even. Because there was a period of time in the 70s and the 80s, kind of tweaked into the 90s, when everyone was really intent on what my spiritual gift was. And I sometimes just saw people just all of a sudden come to a screeching halt because they weren't going to do anything until they found their spiritual gift. And I was going, I don't think this is what God had in mind. You know? And so I love the way Paul phrases all of this in 1 Corinthians 12, beginning in verse 4. Now there are a variety of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are a variety of services, but the same Lord. There are a variety of activities, but it is the same God who activates all of them in everyone. All these are activated by the one and the same Spirit who allots to each one individually as the Spirit chooses. In other words, yes, are some of us more talented than others? That's obvious. But do we all have different things that we bring to the table? Absolutely. Absolutely. So last week I talked about expectations. This week I want to talk about exceptions. So, Rich Cole, we're ready. Now's the moment. I didn't want these to get passed out sooner because on the back it says this. There are no exceptions. Okay? There are no exceptions. Ephesians 4:16, it says this. As each part is working properly, it promotes the bodily growth in building itself up in love. And I know that there are transitions that go on in our lives. And many of you are wrestling with those. You aren't able to do what you used to do. The question then is, Lord, in the context of what my new limitations are, how am I able to best serve you? How am I able to best serve this congregation so that it can become all that it might be? And serving doesn't mean that as younger people come into the life of the church that you kind of back up and dump. It means realistically, what am I able to do at this moment in time in my life? I'm 70. So far, what I'm able to do, I still do it fairly well. But there's going to be a moment in time when someone who hopefully will be gentle and kind will say, Ron, the tools are worn out. You know? That doesn't mean I'm done. It just means that I have to rethink how do I now fit in the body? What is my role in the body? Doesn't mean I'm done, but what is my new role in the body? How do I enable this body to grow? The context of 1 Corinthians is real interesting because a number of things are happening in 1 Corinthians, but there's tension. I mean, one of the things that's wonderful about the New Testament and wonderful about the writings of Paul, Henry would probably know immediately, it doesn't appear in the letter to the Romans that there's an identification of a great deal of conflict. But in almost all of the other letters, it's either very directly or kind of indirectly, there's tension in these churches. They're very, very human. And in the church in Corinth, there are people boasting about who they were baptized by. like one baptism is better than another baptism. And Paul says to them, I'm so glad I didn't baptize any of you. Yeah? He just is laying it out there. So it's in this kind of a context of one-upmanship that Paul is saying to them, you know, get it together. Get it together. What does it mean for you to bring to the table, bring to the ministry, those things that you are good at so that the whole body might prosper? There's that little picture on there. Most of you know Phil Jackson, longtime coach of the Bulls when they were doing great, coach of the Lakers when they were doing great. I can't remember where he went after that. But just a phenomenal coach. But I love this quote by him. Good teams become great teams when the members trust each other enough to surrender the me for the we. That is really tremendous. And anyone who has been in ministry for very long can honestly say the churches that function the best are the churches that learn how to sacrifice the me for the we, and that includes their pastors. And that's the reason why I've said to you over and over, you know, every church is more than their pastor. It's not that pastors are unimportant, but they play a role. But the moment that the church feels that it's defined by its pastor rather than by the Christ and the community of faith they are a part of, they're in trouble. And, you know, I don't mean to demean it or not, because he served, and I mean this sincerely, he served the Lord with all of his strength and all of his mind. And was in many ways a phenomenal trendsetter, even though he didn't intend to be. But, oh, darn it, 70 is catching up with me. Pastor of Crystal Cathedral. Sure. But one of the things that really, that was their downfall is that increasingly as that ministry grew and grew and grew and grew and grew, was that it became more and more focused around that personality. And the church two or three times tried to separate to get reconnected with a new pastor, even in the context of his own offspring, and they couldn't do it. Now, unfortunately, a little bit of his ego got caught up in all of that also, because it really began revolving around him. But, you know, my heart breaks for the fact that that church doesn't exist anymore. Why? Because the congregation increasingly became focused around a personality. And our focus is to be around one personality, and that's Jesus the Christ. And I sincerely believe I was here for a reason. My time is coming to an end, and the new pastor coming is being put here for a reason. We may not even fully understand what the reason is yet, but that blending together and where each one of you are, and as you bring your gifts and your talents, I mean, the greatest gift you could give to your new pastor is that there's so many people volunteering their time, their talent, their gifts to them, they don't know how to process it in the moment. And having to say, I got to put you on hold until I better understand what's going on. But it's even more fun when someone walks, I mean, usually it's fun when someone comes in and says, you know, I've started this and it's up and running. I mean, it's nice that it's part of this strategic plan of how we feel God is leading us, but you get the gist. You get the gist. You don't have permission to sit and complain and be critical. You have permission to get up and to be a part of. And if you can't get up, to sit down to be a part of. I mean, that's what makes a true Christian community a Christian community. I'm going to do something very dangerous, okay? I'm going to talk about the Warriors. And in some ways, I think they're a great illustration of all of this. A phenomenal basketball team. I don't know if we've ever seen them really at their worst, but we definitely saw them not at their best. But we have seen them at their best. And at their best, everyone on that team knew what their role was. And part of the reason why their bench was so phenomenally strong is their bench was made up of players who couldn't go the distance anymore, but could do short spurts and were specialists in things. And they learned how to complement. It's a beautiful example of a church when every one of those guys was on track. They were totally awesome. And they had the ability to, if someone got hurt or had an off night, they had the ability to pick up the pieces and someone else would pick. I mean, they were so fascinating to watch how they would complement and affirm one another and come to one another's assistance. And it was just amazing. And people have oftentimes, well, it has been said, no one has yet seen the church, what the church of Jesus Christ could accomplish if every member was doing their part. We have no idea what any local congregation or the church as a whole can accomplish in making the gospel known. The closest one I know of, but it's no longer in existence right now, was a church that for about 30 or 40 years just had a phenomenal ministry in Washington, D.C. It was called the Church of Our Savior. And every year you had to renew your membership. And in the renewal of the membership was your commitment to give, your commitment to participate, and your identifiable ministry. And if you couldn't commit to those three things, it wasn't like a cult. They just said, this is a group of Christians that are serious. No one here has permission to not be active. If all you can do is pray, that's a big all. Then pray, make that your ministry. Phenomenal. After about 34 years, they came to the realization that they had run their course. And they stepped back and they closed their doors. And they went into other churches. Not to do it the same way, but just said, our mission is done. Our mission is done. Going forward from there. It just happened to be under one of the leaders of the church growth movement back in the 60s when I was in seminary. His name was Peter Wagner and McGavran, the two of them. And Peter Wagner used to say, the best thing any church can do if they really want to stay alive and vital is on their 40th anniversary, nail their door shut, put a for sale sign on the front door, and disperse into groups of 5 to 20 and start that many new churches. But at 40 years, we begin to get into our grooves. We begin to form traditions that we're not willing to break. We begin to become inner-focused, and we lose our whole understanding of what the mission of Christ is all about. There are not very many churches that are willing to do that. Because at 40 years, we've gotten really comfortable. Problem is, oftentimes we're not reaching anyone else because we've gotten too comfortable. So I'm not saying that that's what you need to do here, but I'm just saying you need to be mindful. What is God doing? What is going to be my role in it? And like I've said maybe a couple of times to you, especially during stewardship last year, Jim and I have been doing this for a long time. We've tried to be very faithful in our giving. And we have not been part of a single church family over all these years that we have agreed with everything that they say they're going to do. Our giving is never based upon whether we like everything or we don't like everything. It's based upon our commitment to Jesus Christ and the greater cause. If we didn't have that attitude, we would have a lot of money in the bank right now because we wouldn't have given a cent for the 40-some-odd years that I've been ordained. Because no church is perfect. Remember when I made that comment to you? If you ever find a perfect church, don't join it because you'll ruin it. Okay? They just don't exist. They just don't exist. Back to the Warriors. this gets tough. I'm not a coach, but this is the thought that has gone through my mind. The word out there is that the Warriors live or die by the three-point shot. They are an amazing team in a lot of ways by the three-point shot. The last two teams they played were bigger than they were, stronger they were. In fact, it almost was like watching a child on a playground get beat up by a bully. I mean, James is huge. You know, he's huge. He's one of those kind of guys where, you know, on the moment before you go to confession, you say, "Can someone take out his kneecaps before he gets on the floor?" I mean, how do you slow this guy down? Or how big are these guys? But it just drove me crazy. Because you know who the Warriors are. They weren't playing at full strength. But I kept doing as I was watching those games. I go, why don't they ever drive the ball to the basket? Forget the three-shooter, the three-pointer. The last two teams have learned how to shut that down. If they just drive through the paint, they're going to get fouled. They're the best team at the foul line of anyone in the NBA. They can sit all day at the foul line and win the game on just foul shots. I don't understand this. I'm not a coach. But it just drove me crazy because it reminded me, from my humble perspective, of churches. We have always done it this way. We're not going to adapt. And we're just going to beat ourselves to a pulp. Okay? That's the greatest fear for me with you as a church. Can't do it that way. Yeah? If this is the way you've always done it, you'll die doing it that way. It's just the bottom line. So, reinvigorating listening. You know, last week I shared with you about Munger. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, afterwards ask someone if they know about Munger and they can share you the story. But, you know, are you going to be adaptable and flexible enough to let the next generations that we trust are going to become a part of CPC reinvigorate this congregation? A good congregation. But, you know, let's face it, for about 80% of you, age has caught up. There's a church up in Sacramento, well, up in where we live, in Rockland specifically. It's called Destiny. It's a big church. It combines with K-Love Radio, which is a national radio, Christian radio network, and Fish, which is a local thing up there. They put on this huge, just down the hill from us, huge 4th of July celebration. It's called Celebrate America. And it's just an amazing thing. We've never gone because it's usually hot. Our daughter last night took our two grandkids to go there. I felt Matt wasn't home. I felt bad about Jimmy having to stay home with Matt's dog and keep him settled when the fireworks went off. But in all honesty, I said to my daughter, "You know, hon, I know I love fireworks. I know I would love the whole experiment, the whole thing, but I won't tell you how old she is, but, you know, this is your moment with your kids. I'm 70. And the thought of intentionally for the next 5 hours going into 100 degree heat, I just did that last Saturday at a wedding. I'm not up for 2 Saturdays in a row. I don't want to do this. Have fun." I mean, I got a little jealous later on because the things they were sending us, they were having so much fun. But the flip side of it is, you know, that's not where I am. But I could encourage them, I could whatever. This is not a dumb congregation. You know what I'm talking about. Now, some of you have said, "So, we never got our time, talent, pledge thing last year. This is it. All right? Because we decided that we had to try to redo the survey. So we have a new survey for you. Ha, 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 ha. And by the time Wendy gets here, I want you to turn these in. If you want to turn them in this morning, there's a basket out in the foyer on where you want to serve. Now, I was going to share with you this morning that you can also go to our website and do it, or you can go online to Monkey Survey and do it. Some of you know that Julia was in an automobile accident about 10 days ago, and we haven't had her, so we weren't able to do those last steps. But by next week, you'll have all the instructions. If you don't want to do it on hard paper, you can do it online. But let's pass them out. We're going to wrap up the service. If you're tired of listening to me, you can start filling these out. And there's a basket out there, or during the reception. But the bottom line is this. We thought, okay, we need to re-devise this a little bit, but let's be mindful of this. We do need to begin saying, hey, who are we? What are the strengths? What are the things I bring to the table? Almost done. Galatians 6:7. This sounds like such a negative word, but it's the truth. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for you reap whatever you sow. Okay? The future is greatly dependent upon how each one of you take this message seriously. Yeah? You may only make one check. That's not a contest of who puts down the most checks. It's a question of how do I recommit myself to the body, to the future of this congregation, to what God wants it to be, even though I don't know what it's going to look like. What are the things I bring to the table to say, hey, this is what I can do really well? Or this is what I want to learn how to do. But, you know, here it is. We're starting to get it in front of you again at what we trust would be a very reliable, a very advantageous time for you to begin doing this. Be serious about this. Bring it in next week, whatever, or during this month. But I'm really hoping that one of the things that we're able to put on her, on Wendy's desk the 1st of August is, these are the people in your congregation who have said, I'm willing to step up. It's not like you haven't stepped up before, but this is where right now I'm comfortable serving and I'm open to serving. And you may check down 10 things, I don't know, and realistically, you know, I can only do 2 of them. That's fine. Yeah, that's okay. But how do we want to be a part of this community? How do we, you know, don't talk about it. That's what James says. Don't talk about your faith. Show me your faith. Show it in whatever way God has instilled you to be about it. As I said, this has been a phenomenal joy for me. And I know that you can do this. I'm hoping that 2 to 3 years from now, the word coming from the street about what has that CPC will have recaptured much of what has been lost. But at the same time, everyone will be saying, well, I didn't know we could make macaroni and cheese this way. You know, that there'll be those new twists that'll be happening all the time. I shared a long time ago how at West Valley, it just drove me crazy because our fellowship committee just, every week they were in my face about we need new people to serve on the fellowship committee. Yeah, those of us who are on it, we're getting too old. We can't do it anymore. Well, we had to sit down and we had a very hard talk. And that was this. You know what? There are young families that make themselves available. But here's the difference. Most of these young moms work. Most of you did not. Time is a whole different perspective. Most of you came from backgrounds where you learned how to cook in mass. They didn't learn how to cook in mass. Cooking in mass for them is, who is the best caterer for this kind of dinner or party? It's a different world. Now, when they do step up to do something, they don't do it exactly the way you do it. You know what? The dinner will still be good. The event will still be great. But they only do one because they are so tired of everyone telling them how it's supposed to be done. Just turn it over to them and then do this amazing thing. How can I help you? What would you like me to do? Are you open and receptive? If you don't change that mindset, there won't be a fellowship committee. If you go to West Valley Presbyterian Church in Cupertino today, there is no fellowship community. We don't laugh and play together anymore. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, they lost it because they weren't willing to adapt to how a younger generation would do it. You know, and that's the challenge in ministry. That's the challenge in every aspect of our life. There are different ways of doing it. It's not wrong. It's just different. So be open and receptive to.
You have been listening to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast. To learn more about Community Presbyterian Church and its ministries, come visit us at 2800 Georgia Street in Vallejo, California. Or visit our website, cpcvallejo.org. You can also email us at cpcvallejo@sbcglobal.net. Have a blessed day.